Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it.
Black, white, right, left.
Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome again to Whiskey Congress. I'm coming at you from Cleveland. Steve has called in from the great city of Baltimore, Maryland. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. Had an interesting day. You know, started off in Cleveland, went into the office, left the office, had to drop something off to get shipped out, and then went and got my workout in. Workout ran a little bit long, so then I had to rush to get to the airport. Definitely did the OJ through the airport, chucking old ladies and jumping over babies and, you know, trying to get to my flight so they wouldn't leave me. And of course I do all that, you know, I'm sweating 'cause it's, you know, 85 degrees in Cleveland all of a sudden. And, you know, I get there and they had just started boarding. So I had plenty of time. So, you know, the first 20 minutes sitting on the plane, I'm just sweating like a, you know, fat kid in church.
I have had that experience a few times. It's miserable. The worst one ever was the only time I ever ended up getting seated next to a single attractive girl. And I was just drenched in sweat. I'm like, this is going to ruin anything.
Yeah, resembling. I mean, what's funny, you know, like, so I'm doing all this and I get there and I got plenty of time and, you know, I go to, I keep my pass on my phone. And so I go to scan it in. And the guy is standing there, and he's like, sir, are you okay? And I said, yeah, why? He's like, well, you're sweating a lot. I was like, yeah, I just worked out, and then I ran through the airport to get here. So, yeah, I'm a little sweaty. He said, yeah, you're more than a little sweaty, sir. And he pulled some, like, old napkins from underneath the computer and handed them to me. I'm like, oh, yeah, sure, let me wipe down with these dusty napkins, which I did. And then, of course, and like you said, it's funny, like, there was a girl who was relatively attractive who sat next to me, but she sat in the aisle. I always sit in the window, and nobody sat between us, so they didn't have to deal, you know, with the sweatiness that was me the first 20 minutes of that flight. And I'm sitting there trying to get that little stream of air
right
to hit me right in the face, and it's doing nothing. You know, I made the flight. You know what? So, all right, a little bit about my travel. So, obviously, I'm a competitive powerlifter. We've talked about it on the show. And, you know, when I travel, it's hard for me to find a gym where I can do what I need to do, right? A lot of these gyms are like group fitness places and boot camps and all other stuff. Or, you know, they're like Planet Fitness type places where they don't really want you to be too strong when you work out there. So, it's hard for me to find gyms in the different places that I go. And if I do find one to drive, you know, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, you know, unless I'm in Frederick because they have that Gold's Gym there. But, you know, in Baltimore, it's just a little tougher. So I've been staying in downtown Baltimore, and there's this Under Armour place across the street, literally across the street from my hotel. Right? I've been coming here for months, and I thought it was just an Under Armour store. So I walked in there today looking. I was like, oh, man, I thought I forgot to bring a shirt to work out in, and I only work out in Under Armour because it's the only material that lets me breathe, like it fits me well, and I don't feel like I'm going to suffocate and die when I work out. So I go into the Under Armour store thinking I'm going to find a t-shirt. Lo and behold, it's an Under Armour Performance Center, and it's a damn gym. Like, I've been sitting there working out in this crap hotel gym, if you can call it that, you know, almost dying on these treadmills with dumbbells that don't go over 50 pounds. And all along, there's a gym right across the street from me that's got everything you need. And, I mean, it's Under Armour, so of course they went above and beyond. And it's a spa, and it used to be a bank, and it's a nice little cool setting. But, I don't know, when I go work out there this week, I'll take pictures and post them on our Twitter. And, you know, just to kind of shame myself for being an idiot, complaining about there not being any gyms, and there's one literally right across. I can see it from my hotel room. I stay on the same time every time, or the same side every time. I can see it from my hotel room. Never know it was a gym. That's kind of, I forgot to buy a shirt, by the way.
Well, that's kind of funny, but it's also, I didn't know there was such a thing as an Under Armour Performance Center. And
I didn't either. I had no idea. I never paid attention to the, you know, because I'm blind as fuck. So I never paid attention to the little words Under Armour, right? I just see the big red Under Armour letters, and I'm just like, I got to go in there. Like, because I feel like that they might have good prices on, you know, workout t-shirts and shorts and the shoes. And like, you walk into the left and they have all that stuff right there. But as soon as you walk in the front desk, you know, they got, you know, it's a clear indication that it's a gym. And I'm just like, holy shit, I can't believe that I did not figure this out sooner.
So yeah, I think you should look at it from a positive perspective. You've now found it.
No, so that's, and you're 100% right. I've now found it. I'm going to go either today or Wednesday, get my leg workout in, do some sprints on the turf, and it'll be real nice, real exciting.
All right, well, good for you. I know Under Armour started in the Georgetown, D.C. area, so I wonder if there's any, like, you know.
No, I think it was actually here in Baltimore, because the guy who started the company is from here, and I know he went to Maryland. Their factory is here. They're just actually, Under Armour just did a huge, they're doing a huge investment in some development of a rougher area part of Baltimore that they're going to turn it. There's going to be shops, and they're going to put like a distribution center there, and also apartments, condos, that whole thing. Obviously with what I do, there's an interest there for me. So I'm kind of keyed into it, and I spend a lot of time here, obviously. But I'm a big fan of the company. One, because like I said, the workout clothes for me are the best. Just in terms of wicking sweat and allowing me to continue to work out longer. Which, hey, Under Armour, if you want to sponsor us, feel free.
Yeah.
But I mean, the company overall is pretty. I think they do a good job. Everything is here. They don't outsource to, you know, China or the Philippines. And at least as far as I know, although I guarantee you someone will come at us.
Yeah, I wouldn't be comfortable enough to bet on that.
Right. But I mean, at least I don't know. That's what I read that. That might have changed over the last couple of years. But either way, I'm a big fan of the company. And so but that's my experience. But enough about my travel and my nonsensical workouts. How about Russia?
Yeah, so in the last couple shows, we haven't talked about Russia because there really haven't been any major developments. Smooth segue, by the way. But we might have a pretty serious development now, right? There's talk of a warrant being... I guess they are admitting that they bugged Manafort's office before and after the election using a warrant. And it appears that Mr. Paul Manafort, the former campaign director of Donald Trump, may be in some trouble.
Now, here's the good and the bad. The good is that we don't know exactly what type of trouble. We don't know what they have. We don't know specifics. All we know is kind of what's being leaked out by the media, and what the media is saying is, you know, an indictment is imminent, and Mueller has gone, and special prosecutor who's investigating, you know, the ties to Russia and the Trump administration, he's as much told Mueller that an indictment is forthcoming, but we don't know based off of what, and that's a good sign. I mean, if an indictment is coming, that we actually don't know what it is. There's been a lot of speculation, and some of it is public record, just looking at how, you know, where Manafort's money came from, and then the fact that, you know, there's not a good explanation of it from him. What that tells us is that the investigation is going well and that it's not being leaked, and that's important. I know the media doesn't like that because they don't have scoops and stories and everything else. But at the same time, when a lot of facts and details of a case get leaked to the media, it can definitely undermine the investigative body that's looking into that case, because it puts the defendant or the accused on alert to, you know, get rid of materials, to change their story, to get their stories in line. And so, you know, if something's there, you really want to be able to catch people off guard. Now, you know, the White House is fully aware of what's going on. They're fully aware of this investigation. So if there's anything there to be found, I'm sure they're frantically trying to, you know, get rid of that, cover it up, deal with it. But Mueller, the special prosecutor, again, like he's just, it look, I mean, he's going through everything with a fine tooth comb. And it looks like the White House just doesn't have enough tentacles to kind of bring it all under one umbrella and then, you know, kind of get rid of it all at once. And there's just enough left there where, you know, somebody's going to go down for something.
Well, I just looked at something while you were talking, and apparently the Manafort was, his house was raided this morning. The feds.
Wait, this morning?
This morning. Since Paul Manafort was in bed early one morning. Oh, that's in July. Never mind. That's just the story. Okay. Getting more information. Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
so they've raided his house already.
Yeah, they raided his house. It was an early pre-dawn raid. You know, and a pre-dawn raid is, that's the, you know, that's the one that gets you, because, you know, he's probably laying in bed, and then all of a sudden, you know, you got SWAT guys kicking in the door, and, you know, they're in your house, and you don't know if this is real or a dream, and, you know, you're still trying to figure out what the hell is going on, and they're already in your computer system. So pre-dawn raids are pretty serious.
Yeah.
You know, but that did happen a while ago, but nonetheless, like, Manafort seems like he is in a fair amount of trouble. I'm not sure. It seems like, you know, General Flynn, Mike Flynn, he may be next in terms of, he may be the other person that really feels the fallout from this Russia thing. You know, the White House has definitely distanced themselves from both of those guys. The question is, can they distance themselves enough to where most of the Russia collusion interference sort of kind of gets pinned on these two guys? And then they may try to weather the storm and say it was just those two specific bad actors. You know, Manafort was removed from, you know, the campaign, and then, you know, General Flynn was removed from the administration shortly after, you know, inauguration. So they had little, if any, impact. That's going to be how they spin it. Now, you know, we'll see what else Mueller has up his sleeve over time. And now, I said this a long time ago, and I don't think people believe me when I said it, but we don't actually, we really, really hope that Trump and his administration are just not politically as savvy as they think they are, and essentially they're just dumb and didn't realize how they were exposing themselves and the country to a pretty big risk in letting Russia in. That's the hope. That's the goal. You don't want to actually find out that the current president of the United States and his staff intentionally were colluding with Russia to undermine the democracy of the United States and to impact our government and our country and our way of life in a negative way. That is a horrifying thought in my mind.
Well, I think if I had to predict, I'd say the answer is somewhere in the middle. I don't think they necessarily, I think they were willing to do whatever it took to win, even if it meant bringing in foreign agencies. And I have a serious question for you that if it's kind of an oddball question. So if you don't know the answer, I don't. Can someone be pardoned before they are charged with anything?
No.
Right?
There's got to be a charge.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, there's got to be a charge. And actually, I believe that you have to be, like, not only just a charge, but I think you actually, there has to be an adjudication,
a conviction,
in order to issue a pardon.
I mean, that makes perfect sense. I'm just, this is going to be curious to me, because if Manafort is not necessarily the biggest fish, but is the key to the dominoes falling, then in theory, Mueller could grant him immunity, taking away his ability to be pardoned, taking away, and can't immunity be granted on a conditional basis?
Yeah. I mean, you can definitely grant immunity on a conditional basis and say, all right, this immunity is based on the, you know, amount and value of information that you are able to provide to us. I think your brain may be moving a little bit faster than you wanted to right now in terms of getting into immunity and pardon and everything else. Because if they grant him immunity from federal prosecution, which is what he would be looking at, then there's no real need for the pardon, right? Like, I mean, then that means
I'm just saying for him to roll on higher level officials, and he's pretty damn high, so maybe he is the biggest fish.
Right, and that's the thing. The question is, you know, would he actually, like, as high as he is, you have to wonder if he would even need that, if there's anyone for him to roll on. Like, because part of me believes that Flynn and Manafort both were greedy. I don't think those two guys were out to undermine the country and the fabric of who and what we are as much as they were out to fill and line their own pockets. And they saw that, you know, if they saw the momentum for Trump, they were able to read the tea leaves and said, all right, let me see how much money I can get from no one in America was willing to give it, you know. And so they figured, hey, this is a way where I can get easy money, you know, just by supporting these causes or whatever that are kind of in their minds inconsequential.
You know, now that I think about it, Steve, Gerald Ford pardoned Nixon. I know Nixon had not been convicted of anything yet. So what I'm getting at, what my concern is will Trump be able to just say, I'm pardoning everybody, let's stop talking about this, fake news, and it legally goes away? For a variety of reasons, I don't want that to happen. And now that I think about it, if Trump asked a while ago if you could pardon himself, if you could pardon yourself, wouldn't Nixon have done that? I mean, I know we're getting into obscure areas of
yeah,
civics,
I mean,
and
like,
law.
This is kind of out of, yeah, I mean, like, this is kind of beyond, like, anything that I would have ever legitimately studied.
Oh, I understand. I understand.
No, well, you know, I mean, but think, I mean, like, at what point in time, you know, whether, you know, in practice or in law school, are you seriously thinking about a president asking about pardoning himself?
Pardoning himself. Yeah.
You know, and so, I don't know. I mean, you're right, Gerald Ford. I mean, but the whole thing with Gerald Ford, that was with him pardoning Nixon, and you're right, he did do that, and I forgot about it. It was more ceremonial, right? Because it was after the fact.
It was after, you know, he was removed from office, yes.
Right, because Nixon was impeached, and they were going through the proceedings, and then he resigned.
Right.
Right, to avoid the actual ouster from office.
Right.
So, and then, you know, Gerald Ford goes in, and so Gerald Ford then pardons him, which essentially is the, all right, guys, he resigned in disgrace, shut it down, let's leave it as it is.
Yeah.
You know, and it was more ceremonial on in that aspect. I don't know if Trump would be able to get away with that. And the other issue is, you know, I mean, Trump would have to do that now, right? He would have to say, all right, I'm pardoning Paul Manafort now, on, you know, because for anything that he might have done, which that would be political suicide for Trump.
It would, but we talked last show about how desperate he must be getting. I don't know if you saw this.
Listen,
even Ann Coulter is calling for his impeachment now.
Right, but now he, you know, everybody, like, he's got some people that are just a little bit more politically savvy and strategic, telling him, kind of like guiding him now. And so I don't even think now that the idea of I don't think the idea of pardoning Paul Manafort is even in his head, to be honest with you. I just don't think, and even if he asks, like, hey, can I just pardon him and get rid of all this, I think everyone is just like, no, you can't. Don't. Right? Like, I mean, essentially and strategically, you want this. You actually kind of want this. Because, again, you can say you want Manafort and Flynn to both be charged and ultimately found guilty, because then you can say, all that Russia talk, these two idiots, greedy, those two, part of the swamp, get rid of them, right?
Yeah.
He can use that to his advantage, right? I mean, that's what I would do, but, you know, who am I? I'm just a guy.
Well, you're far more than that, Stephen. It's gonna get interesting.
Ego boosts.
What's that?
I said, I love your ego boost. They're so filled with such love and sarcasm and hate and rage.
I wouldn't say hate, sarcasm and love. it's going to get interesting. And I've seen a lot of right wing folks saying, why aren't they talking about Russia now? Where's this Russia talk? Was it okay? It's back, boys.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I mean, and obviously conservative media, they're going to immediately go to any connection that they can find between Hillary. And it's going to be more so Hillary than Obama, but mostly, you know, anything that they can find with Hillary connecting her to Russia, they're going to try to put that out there as a pivot, as a diversion from, you know, what's going on with kind of their, you know, with Manafort and Flynn, because they were so close to Trump. And, you know, it's a smart play on their part because, you know, it's a distraction. Hey, look at the shiny object over here. Don't worry about the giant gorilla right in your face.
Well, I think what I've seen is they're saying, what about Facebook? Well, Facebook isn't running for office and Facebook didn't become president. So,
well, you know what? There's something important there, though, because, you know, just today, you know, a little bit of a transition. Just today, we had a bipartisan acknowledgement, and we're going to see a bipartisan effort on, you know, looking into social media and how, you know, how it can impact our elections. I mean, everyone, you know, on a political standpoint, we're looking across the board. You're seeing a bipartisan agreement that Russia influenced the 2016 election via social media. You know, they had, you know, thousands of people, you know, working at, you know, thousands of IP addresses on Facebook, just generating memes and making comments that they knew people would latch onto as truth or fact, whether they were or were not, you know, making memes that were not accurate or true and knowing that they would spread like wildfire. And they did, and it worked. And there was even, I was listening today on my ride from the airport to the hotel, there was a report, and they had audio of Russian guys celebrating during, or as soon as they found out that Trump had won the election, they were celebrating and talking about how, you know, they were able to do something that they had been trying to do since the Cold War, and that was impact a U.S. Democratic election, and that they had succeeded and achieved their goal.
And this is like a hot mic situation, right? Like they didn't know they were being recorded.
Exactly. Yeah, and I mean, to me, that's pretty damn telling. And so I don't think we can dismiss that, because, I mean, you saw it, I saw it, and I think I put a lot more value into it than you did, just because, like, I saw how people were just rapidly consuming everything that they saw on Facebook or Twitter. And if it aligned with the way they thought, then they read it, they consumed it, and they spread it. And they fought vehemently anyone who disagreed with it or provided any sort of alternative thought. And we saw that on both sides. And I think what the Russians might have done is they probably did it on both sides. It wasn't about so much they wanted to see Donald Trump win as much as they wanted to disrupt things so much that they just put, that we would just put anybody in, and that anybody became Donald Trump, not because they thought he was so not the right person that he was the perfect person for them.
Well, I think also, and we've said this on the old show prior to the election, that he is much easier to predict and easier to manipulate. I mean, Putin has played him like the fiddle.
God, it's unbelievable. Jim, it's unbelievable. Like, Donald Trump, you literally just give him a compliment, and he thinks that you think he's the best. And he will then praise you and give you, you know, he can't say a negative thing about Vladimir Putin. Like, you probably couldn't say, hey, Donald Trump, here's $500, $1,000. Say a negative thing about Vladimir Putin. He's like, he's giving me so many compliments. How could I?
I mean, shit. He went on Bill O'Reilly's show, and Bill O'Reilly said, how can you trust this guy? He's a killer. His response was, lots of people are killers.
Yes.
Really?
I mean, right. Like, okay.
True. And if John Gotti was running for office, I would have that same problem.
Right. It's just like, yeah, but I mean, exactly. I mean, those lots of people that are killers aren't running countries.
Yeah.
Depends on what country we're talking about, I guess.
True enough. We'll see where this goes, but Russia is back on the front burner, at least in terms of interesting news.
And by the way, the last thing about that is, you know, when this was at its height, I think we both said, listen, I don't want to hear about Russia again until you have something solid, because for the longest time, a lot of it was just, you know,
media speculation
and speculation. And I mean, it was bothersome and annoying, and none of it was based in fact. It was all based in conspiracy and conjecture, and it just, you know, it was a waste of time. And the media was creating the thing that was distracting them from, from some of the bigger things that they should have been focusing on with Donald Trump. And then they kind of, you know, they turned around and blamed Trump for distracting them. It's like, well, actually, this one isn't on Trump. He just sat back and let you idiots do what you did. You know, I mean, like, you guys are the ones who got in the frenzy about nothing. You know, you guys are the ones who were publishing stories that you couldn't back up with the right sources, and then you got called out for fake news because, again, you weren't doing what you were supposed to do as journalists. But now it looks like we're starting to get a little bit more solid foundation for some of these stories. A lot of this will be a lot harder to dispute and to call fake news when you have, you know, video and audio and, legally approved, warranted wiretaps, and, you know, we're listening to Manafort basically hang himself.
Yeah, and I mean, so last show, you picked Rex Tillerson of the Deadpool. I changed from Jeff Sessions to Kellyanne Conway because I think she's starting to double talk and look bad. But I think this situation, because Trump's main anger at Sessions was his recusal of himself from this investigation, and if the shit does hit the fan, that anger is probably going to swell right back up in a big way.
Yeah, that's a good call. That's definitely a good call. So we're definitely on the same page there.
All right.
All right. Well, you know, like you said, we'll keep an eye on it, see how it goes.
So we've had a lot of talks about, you know, we talked about Jemele Hill last show and her tweet and what should the repercussions for that be. And as we were getting ready to go on air tonight, it is Monday night, and Monday Night Football was on. And who sang the song for Monday Night Football tonight?
It was one Hank Williams Jr. back on Monday Night Football, him and all his rowdy friends.
And so I had forgotten the story, but Hank Jr. was sort of kicked off of Monday Night Football for...
Not sort of, I mean exactly.
Because he tweeted a bunch of really bizarre shit, mostly directed at Obama, when Obama was still in office.
No, Jim, he didn't tweet it. He said it.
Oh, he said it. Okay.
In an interview. Yeah.
Oh, okay. And what was it again? It was. He called Obama a Muslim.
He compared, Speaker John Boehner, who was the Speaker of the House at the time. John Boehner going to play golf with President Obama he equated that to, you know, the prime minister of Israel, which is Benjamin Netanyahu, playing golf with Hitler, right? Like, the, you know, like Hitler and Netanyahu would be like mortal enemies because, you know, obviously Hitler hated the Jews.
The head of the Jewish state. Murdered, and, yes.
Right. I mean, murdered millions of Jews. So obviously the you know, the person who you know, murdered that many Jews is probably not going to sit down and have, or, you know, have a game of golf with the president of the Jewish state. So, you know, he made that comment and he was fired by ESPN. Now, ESPN, in light of, you know, everything that's been going on in the NFL, and, you know, mind you, the NFL has a huge say in this whole thing, like with the, you know, with the amount of money that ESPN paid and the amount of money that the NFL generates, they have a seat at the table in this as well. And I think that it's not a coincidence that you have the, you know, the issues with Colin Kaepernick, you know, people, you know, the yep. conservatives saying that they're pissed at the NFL for,
they're going to boycott the NFL
because of, well, I mean, well, you know, yeah, the people say they're not going to watch another game as long as Colin Kaepernick is allowed to play, which he's not on the team, or anytime a player kneels for the national anthem, the conservative crowd gets all worked up and says they're not going to watch that team until, you know, that person's cut and maimed and slaughtered and burned alive and all that other shit. So I don't think it's a coincidence that after, you know, the season last year, this turbulent offseason, that now they bring back in Hank Williams Jr. to sing the Monday night song. It's kind of inconsequential. It's a stupid, you know, opener to a song that's, you know, it's all of, you know, 2.5 minutes. But I think it's a big kind of F you to the liberal crowd, to those that are, you know, fighting social, because listen, Hank Williams Jr., you know, I mean, I don't really give a shit about the guy, but I mean, listen, you go to one of his concerts and you will hear him talk about, you know, he calls gays cocksuckers, and he's got a song called Keep the Change where essentially, you know, it's bashing gays and progressive liberalism in general. And, you know, he also, he's got a song that basically talks about, you know, what if the South won and how better off things would be if the South would have won the Civil War. And, you know, the people who, you know, who listen to his music, they love it. So, you know, Hank Williams Jr. isn't exactly, you know, this kind of neutral guy who just happened to make a stupid comment, that they're letting back into this. I mean, he's, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being a giant douchebag and 10 being a pretty stand up guy. He's somewhere around a 4.
And I think I would say it differently than you. I don't think it's an F you to liberals. I think it's a, we still love you rednecks. If you want to argue, which, that's one and the same.
I mean, it's the same thing.
Okay.
I mean, it's the same thing. You know, I mean, that's exactly what it is. And, you know, I mean, and you know, it's hard for me to reconcile because, you know, just on our last show, I said that, you know, for everybody who's boycotting the NFL because they stand with Colin Kaepernick, I just don't know if I can agree with that, because I don't, like, Colin Kaepernick is not, like, listen, I support the guy's free speech. I'm not going to bang the drum for the guy to be on a team, because I think there's some legit football reasons why he's not on the team, but I think there's also some bullshit reasons why he's not on the team, and for me, that's just not enough. Like, you know what? Here's a little sign. I'm going to deviate a little bit. But it, you know what really fucking gets annoying after a while as a black person? You know, social justice issues come up, and we always got to be the ones to give shit up and boycott shit, right? Like, oh, you know what? Stores that have stuff that we need, we're going to boycott you. And we're going to go get shit that we don't want from someplace else that we don't want to go to show you. Right, we're going to take our dollars somewhere else. And we may not be able to find something that equates to what you have, but we're going to go inconvenience ourselves to go fuck you. Like, every, we got, you know, like if you're down for the cause and you're doing what you're supposed to do as a black person, like we always have to be the ones who are fucking uncomfortable, right? Like, why the fuck do I gotta give up football, right? Because the whole progressive left is up in arms because Colin Kaepernick, who was on his way down as a fucking quarterback, was gonna get cut from a team, right? Finally decides to grow a social conscience, you know, after being in the league for fucking 5 years. So now all of a sudden I gotta go to bat for him, right? As a fan but as a you know, socially conscious person, like now I gotta go to bat for this guy. So now I gotta give up the thing that I love, the sport that I played, the sport that allowed me to fucking go to college, something that I enjoy. I gotta give this shit up now because of fucking Colin Kaepernick.
Well, I think you said it well in the last show.
I can't get behind someone like Malcolm Jenkins and support it and say I'm gonna watch it and I'm gonna support a guy like a Malcolm Jenkins or you know any of the other good guys that are doing plenty of good in the league. Nope, I gotta give it up because of Colin Kaepernick, right? Because you have an average guy who's not on a team right now. Now, listen, there's plenty of arguments for why he should be on a team. I'm not saying that he shouldn't be in the league, because there's plenty of dog shit backup quarterbacks and even dog shit starting quarterbacks who Kaepernick is better than. Like, the Colts right now are fucking crazy for not signing him. I mean, like, they're just going to sit there and get drilled week after week until Andrew Luck comes back. Like, that's fucking insane. I mean, but those teams are paying a price because they're losing, right? And losing ultimately loses you money in the NFL. But, you know, that, and I'm sorry to divert, but I mean, like, that's a really frustrating thing, is that every fucking time something comes up, it's just like, all right, you know how we're going to fix it? We're going to get uncomfortable, and that'll make everybody else uncomfortable, and that's what's going to bring social change. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but we haven't really shifted anything with all of our dollars in many, 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 many years, right? Like, we just haven't had that effect. You know, we were supposed to do all this boycotting and protesting over, oh my God, so many different issues, and it hasn't had an impact. Now, part of it is because there's no organization, there's no direction, you know, there's a million, everybody's got their own agenda. And so, you know, some people would say, well, you know, if you would just get on board, then, you know, and everybody just got on board, then it would be fine. Yeah, I guess. But at the same time, that's just not how it's played out. And I just think that, you know, the whole idea of boycotting the NFL, it's just ridiculous. But you know what? At the same time, fucking do it. I don't care, because I'm going to watch. That stadium is full. I'm watching that Monday Night Football game right now while we talk. Giant Stadium is full. The game is still on. The players are still playing. And no one gives a shit about the boycott. So let's figure out a better way to affect the change that we want to cause, other than a fucking inconsequential boycott that no one is fucking paying attention to except for Karen Hunter and fucking Sean King.
A conservative white female friend of mine on Facebook today said she's going to boycott the NFL if any of her precious Bengals take a knee or sit during the anthem. And why hasn't Colin Kaepernick put his money where his mouth is? And my other friend posted an article showing how much money Colin Kaepernick has given to these causes. And she said, well, I hope it's going to the right places. I'm like, okay. So now there's people protesting and boycotting the NFL because of the protests and because Colin Kaepernick's not in the league. And it is kind of comical that both sides are protesting and boycotting. And like you said,
yeah, I mean, it is funny because, I mean, you know, like, so it's funny though, but it gives you an idea of the fringe, right? Like, you've got your far left and your far right, right? And a lot of people saying that they're boycotting the NFL, most of those people probably don't fucking watch the NFL to begin with. Let's be honest. You know, like, Sean King, are you really that big? And you know who I'm talking about, Sean King, right?
Sure.
Okay, so I don't know if I believe that, sure, but fine, we'll go with it. But, you know, like, Sean King, I don't really buy that he was really that into the NFL. I mean, he was a very, very active social justice warrior. He's an activist. You know, it's all, you know, he is, you know, Black Lives Matter.
And a journalist. And
right, like, so I don't know how much fucking football he was watching to begin with. So I don't know how much his, you know, boycott is actually a legit boycott. Now, he says he was a diehard fan and he's you know, I forget where he's from. I don't even know what his team is. So, I mean, you know, like I've never seen a tweet or anything from him supporting any particular football team. So, again, I kind of call bullshit, but hey, maybe who knows? Maybe he's the biggest Atlanta Falcons fan or whatever we've ever seen. But a lot of these people I kind of call bullshit. It's just like you're going to sit here and tell me you're boycotting something that you rare. Like, you know, you watch two games a year, so now you're going to go to no games a year. That's not exactly a boycott. You know, but even if they do watch, even if they watch every game and they play fantasy and everything else, this whole experiment with boycotting, it shows you just how many, like how few people are on the fringe on either side, the left or the right, because you have some hard people on the right that are saying they're boycotting the league because of Colin Kaepernick and because of the Cleveland Browns and because of guys like Malcolm Jenkins and Michael Bennett, and they're tired of seeing politics, you know, trickle into sports, and they have better things to do with their Sundays, like mow their lawn and trim their hedges and go to little Timmy's, you know, whatever game. So they're going to go do that, and they're going to take the ball and go home. Okay, fine. So that's, you know, 50,000 people, right? And then you have the same people on the left, right, that are just so fed up with the NFL, and it's basically a bunch of slave drivers, and they exploit black players that they pay millions and hundreds of thousands of dollars to. And so because of that, they are not going to watch, right? So there's another 50,000 people. And so all that being said, the stadiums are still full. There's still a lot of money being made and exchanged every fucking day. And the interest of the NFL is still very high. Now, where they will come back at me and say is, yeah, but, you know, from last year, there's been a 4% drop, and the year before that, there was a 4% drop, you know, and so over the last 3 years, there's been a 15% drop in viewership, and it's because of the extreme left and the extreme right. And my argument to that is actually, no, it's the NFL's own doing, because we have games on Sunday and Monday and Thursday, and then once college football is over, on Saturday. You know, it's because the NFL got too greedy. They put too much of it out there, and it got watered down. And the game itself isn't as good. A lot, you know what I mean? Like,
well, I think the product has also been hurt by the fact that instant replay on every single thing is slowing the game down and making it less fun to watch. I think it's good that some of the rules that they've changed to improve player safety, to avoid wide receivers getting just, you know, murdered when they, you know, cross the middle and have to extend their arms to chase a ball, I actually think are good things for the league. But when everything's a penalty, when it's not, you know, done in Marcus of Queensbury rules, is hurting the game as well. And I think the real one to me is how brutal the pace of the game is with a replay on every turnover, every scoring play, every challenge, and they pixelate down to the guys, well, his shoelace actually touched out of bounds before his toe touched inbounds. So that's I'm agreeing with you, but I'm just adding a factor that I think the watchability has been hurt.
Yeah, I mean, I can't argue with that, although I think some of it, man, I mean, I think you're right. You're definitely right, but I think some of it, though, does help the game in the fact that you look at a couple years back, Odell Beckham Jr. made just one of the all-time greatest catches I've ever seen, that anyone's ever seen. You know, he leaps off of one foot, lays back, puts one hand out, grabs the ball, lands inbound. It's a catch, no doubt. They replayed it just because they basically couldn't believe that he actually made the catch. And you see that sometimes these guys do things that are so amazing that in real time you can't process it with the human eye. And then you go back and you use a slow motion camera and you realize, holy shit, this guy just did something inhuman. And I think that element is still there. But you're right, the pace of the game hurts, the penalties. Now, I think they have gotten better with the penalties on the quarterbacks. A couple years ago, it was brutal. And, you know, like you couldn't look at a quarterback wrong without, you know, drawing a penalty. So, but I think the league has gone kind of, and they're slow to change, but they do listen, right? Like this year, they, like now guys can celebrate and they can basically do whatever they want as long as it's not like sexual or overtly explicit.
Right.
You know, I'm a big Steeler fan. The Steelers scored a couple touchdowns this week, and you know, every time the receivers scored, they would get together and do a pretend dice game. I think that's hilarious because that's the type of shit that we did when we were in high school. We didn't get penalized for it. You know, me and Chris and Johnny and all those guys, like, we would come up with little shit to do. Now, usually, you know, I was usually too tired to do anything too extensive because, like, I would have to, you know, I was on offense and I would go to, I was on offense, I was on the point after, and then I'm like kickoff, and then I, you know, play defense. So, you know, I use that time to get to the sideline to suck oxygen. But, you know, they brought some of the fun back. So my whole point with this is everyone's saying that they're going to boycott and they're not going to watch. Okay, fine. But there's still millions and millions and millions of people watching. And the league is still making billions and billions and billions of dollars. So even if they lose over the next 5 years, they lose another 25% of their viewership, they're still one of the biggest shows in town. And I think that they may still continue to lose some of their viewership just because of the way that people consume media. So they're going to have to adjust, and they're going to have to loosen up and find better ways to get their product out. Because the whole, like, because another big thing with the NFL that's a big turnoff is having access to it, right? Like, just the fact that, you know, the only way to get all the games is through fucking NFL Sunday Ticket. I just got rid of Sunday Ticket this year. I've had it for the last 5 years, and finally I just got tired of paying fucking $300 for it because my team plays a lot of games on local
and national. You get the two Browns right, games every year. And
yeah, I mean, like, so, yeah, and I get two of the, you know, and aside from their primetime games, I get to see two of them because they play the Browns twice every year. So it didn't make sense for me to continue to pay the money that I was paying for Sunday Ticket. Now, I'm probably going to regret that in about a week. And I may do an emergency call last minute to get it. But, you know, I mean, like, so it happened. So the NFL is going to have to figure out a way to balance making money against access and keeping the profitability of the game alive. Like, they're going to have to get more creative than just, we've got Sunday Ticket. And you can kind of see it a little bit. You know, if you have Verizon, you can see some games, and, you know, NFL.com is doing some things, but they're going to still have to get more creative than where they're at right now.
Well, for me, it's, I mean, you witness what I do to myself in a sports bar on Sundays on a few occasions. It's not pretty, but as a Bills fan living in Cleveland and not having DirecTV, I have, you know, few choices if I want to watch the game. And so, I mean, as much as I could say these are the things I don't like about the NFL, my team stinks, and yet there I am every Sunday still sucking it up and watching the game and then calling my buddies back in Buffalo to gripe about no offense and whatever. So the league owns me as a fan.
And I hate to cut you off. So I'm sitting here and I'm watching halftime is just about over and Monday night's coming back. Now, I don't have the sound up. But I'm watching what they did. The NFL did with Hank Williams Jr., who kind of brought us to the whole NFL thing. They bring him back, but they bring him back with, like, these younger, hipper guys, a couple black guys, and a couple, you know, like, white guys that look like they probably grew up in, like, Parma or something and are big Eminem fans. And so it's Hank Williams Jr. with a hip-hop flair a little bit, and I think that's interesting. So we're bringing Hank Williams Jr. back to appease our, you know, our conservative white, you know,
country.
Conservative white base, but, you know, not to completely alienate everybody else. Here's some hip-hoppy guys, a few black guys, and a few white guys to balance it all out. And Hank's going to have a real good time with them, and so everybody should be happy. Let's just watch football and have fun.
What's funny, what would have been awesome to be in is the marketing meetings where they're trying to put this let's make everybody happy stuff together. Like, okay, we're bringing back
Jim,
Hank.
That was the meeting. I just gave it to you word for word. That was it.
How do they justify taking the Carrie Underwood aspect out, though? Because there's reasons to like her, too.
You know what? I think that the NFL realizes that they don't, like, the NFL doesn't need sex appeal, right? Like, they don't need, like the Steelers don't have cheerleaders. The Browns don't have cheerleaders. I don't think the Giants do. And there's
the Bills
a lot
don't.
That, like, the Bills don't. There's a lot of teams that don't have cheerleaders. And sex is a big part of football, but because the players have a lot of sex with you know, very attractive women and a lot of women, and they have access to them. That's where sex and football kind of come together, right? And, you know, in places like Green Bay when the Packers win and there's all sorts of babies born 9 months later because of the, you know, how passionate people are, and they celebrate with a little victory bang.
But a little, leave it in celebration, okay.
Right. But you don't have to sell football through sex, right? And part of having, you know, a Carrie Underwood or a Faith Hill or, you know, pick attractive female country singer and plug her in, Shania Twain, whoever, the whole, like, you're the reason you're doing that is, yes, those women have very strong voices that grab your attention, but they're putting them out there for the sex appeal, to draw you in. And what they realize is they don't need that. Like, football fans are football fans, and they're not there for the sex. They're there, right, to watch the sport, whether it's to bet on it, or it's fantasy football, or it's daily fantasy football, or they just are passionate about their team, whatever it might be, or just because it's the thing to do on Sunday, Monday, Thursday night.
And that's a pretty good lead into something that I saw, and I sent it your way. There was an interview on CNN with a sports journalist named Clay Travis, who, when asked about the Jemele Hill thing, said he believes in two things: the First Amendment and boobs. And I watched this, and I was so fucking aggravated because he says First Amendment and boobs, and the other, I don't know who the other sports journalist was. It was a black man on the other side of the blonde woman on CNN, but they acted like they had never heard the word boobs before and were just mortified by it. And look, I think Clay Travis was being a douchebag. You know, he was trying to be shock jockey and whatever. And I'm not trying to give him any kind of credit whatsoever, but I am calling out the other two and saying, spare me the indignation. It was, you saw it. What were your thoughts?
Well, I mean, Clay Travis is like a male version of, like a male sports version of a Tommy Lauren or an Ann Coulter. He's a part of this somewhat of a trend that we're seeing in sports talk where you find really a smart attorney who has some hint of an athletic background that's, you know, started to write about or has some sort of connection to sports, and then they bring him into the sports talk realm. You saw that with, you know, ESPN, you know, with Jay Billis and Eric, I believe Eric Carabel. Was that his name? I can't remember.
You're losing me. I don't know who that is.
No, there was a guy that, no, it's not Carabel. There was a guy on ESPN years ago who was an attorney, and he talked sports, and he used to fill in for Mike and Mike all the time. He ended up getting fired for sexual harassment or whatever, which is typically the thing that gets you fired at ESPN. God, what was that guy's name? It's going to fucking haunt me all night. But anyway, so, this Clay Travis guy is of that ilk. The new guy on ESPN is Will Cain. Will Cain is, you know, he's an attorney. He, you know, did a blog about sports, and then ESPN kind of sucked him up. He's conservative. He's a, you know, attractive white guy, and he is, you know, he's smart and he's witty and he's conservative. So you know, he's kind of a counterpuncher to some of the more liberal, progressive people like the Jemele Hills and Michael Smiths and Mike Greenbergs and, you know, everything else you'll find on ESPN. Clay Travis is that guy for Fox Sports 1. Actually, if he's even with Fox Sports now, he may not be, but, you know, Clay Travis is, you know, an attorney, a blogger, and he's the guy who, you know, really will say whatever it takes to get attention, right? And he's the guy who, you know, loves to, you know, bash blacks and say, oh, well, you know, I'm just not PC. You know, I'm not a racist, but I'm not gonna shy away from the truth. And so then he gets on CNN and he says, you know, I believe in, you know, the First Amendment in boobs. And, you know, I everybody reacted. The female host, she, you know, she just said, let me get this straight. You said BOOBS. Now,
that annoyed me.
That annoyed you. But when I listened to it, it sounded like he initially said booze, BOOZE. Right, like I believe in the First Amendment and alcohol, liquor, beer. Right.
And so, if that's what you meant, I'm okay with that.
Right, but I have no idea what she thought. I think she's pretty sure that she heard boobs, but she wanted to verify. Like she's like, and I don't see you. That annoyed you, but for me, that doesn't bother me because she's like, let me just make sure that you're an asshole.
In that context, I'm okay with it.
Right. Let me make sure that you're an asshole and let you hang yourself. So did you say boobs? And, you know, he's like, yeah, sure did. And she's like, okay, just checking. And so, you know, because she didn't say much after that. She's just like, okay, you know, like she kind of did the roll. She rolled her eyes and whatever. You know, now the other host, the black guy, his reaction was pretty, in my opinion, was just bad. You know, he goes so that he's so appalled. Oh,
right.
And,
I agree.
And that's not how you handle that situation. See, to me, how you handle that situation is, you know, you point out the ridiculousness of the statement. You're really bringing boobs into this. We're trying to have a serious conversation. We're trying to actually look at something that is a problem, and you try to bring levity to the situation by bringing boobs into the mix when we have a female co-host. Outstanding. Way to be an immature toolbag, and you move on. And some of these people just, you know, some people, Jim, just don't have the fucking charisma to be able to deal with some of these situations. I mean, some of these people are so fucking stiff. They've been trained to only work in what, you know, like they're so, the script has been written for them. They cannot deviate from it. And if they deviate from it, they completely melt down or they handle it like a fucking box of rocks. And you see that a lot from the left. They either handle it like a box of rocks or they just completely have an emotional meltdown and lose their shit and nothing actually gets accomplished. Like, you know, this whole Clay Travis thing, if it's me on that set, I would have glazed over that so quickly you barely even would have realized that it would have happened, right? And it really would have deflated him because that's something that he had cocked and loaded and ready to go, and he was waiting for someone to get indignant. He was waiting for the woman to overreact, and that's exactly what he was waiting for, because you know why? Guess what, Jim? Who's talking about him right now?
Well, lots of people, mostly the right, calling the left a bunch of snowflakes and...
Yeah, but but the whole point, everybody's talking about him, including us.
Yeah.
Right? Like, why the fuck, why do we care? Why are we even talking about this guy? Because he mentioned boobs on air? I mean, come on, like, it's ridiculous, but
it is,
you know, he said it and everybody reacted and, you know, fell into the trap.
I hate to use the expression to his credit, but I will. To his credit, this goofball that I knew nothing about 48 hours ago is now getting talked about by us. There's all kinds of articles about him. If you Google his name, it pops up right away. And it, so yeah, he triggered the audience.
Right. And it just, yeah, exactly.
And
it's, yeah, go ahead.
And left-wing indignation and left-wing overreaction is so detrimental to real causes, in my opinion. I gotta tell you the story, actually. I was out Saturday night and I consumed substantial amounts of alcohol. So I took a, what's that?
I said, say what?
Yeah, shocking. And so I got a ride home using Lyft, who should also sponsor us. And the woman who picked me up was, I would guess, mid-60s. And so she picks me up, and I said, you know, hey, how's your night going? She goes, well, a lot better than last night. And I'm like, oh, gee, what happened last night? And she tells me that she got called a bitch and got cussed out. And I'm like, what? And she said, yeah, and she had a bit of a Southern accent. And she said that, you know, she picked up two guys who said they were from San Diego. And she started talking. They asked her where she was from. And she said she's from Georgia. She's got this, like I said, a bit of a Southern accent. And she said, as soon as she said she was from Georgia, they started calling her a bitch, telling her she was a racist. And I'm taking her word for it. I don't see any value in her making that story up. It was a little bit awkward for my ride home to go through this conversation, but I said, you know, that's ridiculous. That's horrible. And, you know, just because someone is from Georgia and they have a Southern accent does not instantly make them a racist. And yet we are becoming so polarized and so reactionary, and it's really bad all around.
Yeah. That really bothers me, because I think one of the biggest issues facing the progressive left is that they're so, they're so intolerant of people who don't think like them, who don't believe in every single thing that they believe in, to the point where they will attack you based off of, you know, superficial things that don't necessarily mean anything. Just because you're from the South with an accent doesn't mean that you're a card-carrying Ku Klux Klan member who burns crosses, right? Like, I mean, there's plenty of independent free thinkers in the South and in the North and the West and everywhere else. And so it's really a bad trait of a lot of your progressive left,
Everyone's always looking for the enemy now, right? Everyone's trying to look for the enemy. They find something to seize on. They then project the rest of thoughts onto them. I mean, you know, when I describe myself as a liberal, especially if I'm in, a hunting or gun crowd, I'll say, yeah, I'm a liberal. And they'll say, oh, so you believe in this about abortion? I'm like, I don't remember talking about that, but thanks for deciding for me. Actually, you've totally mischaracterized.
By the way, Eric Kucilius.
Okay. Okay.
Was a guy who was fired from ESPN. Do you remember what I'm talking about now?
I do now, yes. I was like, so I talked long enough for you to Google it.
That was just bugging the shit out of me.
I was trying to Google it while you were talking, but I was typing in ESPN lawyer fired and getting all kinds of goofy stuff.
Yeah.
Eric Kucilius, yes. I remember that name well. Yes, he was a smart guy, a lawyer, and yes, he did fill in for them all the time. So anyway, yeah, it was a really bad, assuming this woman's story is true, which I 100% believe because there was no motivation in making it up. It was bad form by these idiots, and it takes a real tough guy to be with three other guys and yell at a 65-year-old woman who's forced to drive you. Now, she claims she eventually had enough and told them to get out of her car, and I hope she was telling the truth about that. But either way, just, you know.
Well, and I think, you know, I think even if her story, I mean, chances are, you know, maybe the truth is somewhere in the middle. Maybe that it didn't happen exactly like that, and there was some hyperbole and exaggeration there, which is possible. Maybe she gets bored and just wants to kind of tell you a story. I don't know. But, I mean, I think that we've seen enough examples of, you know, people that are progressive liberals or on the progressive left who, you know, as soon as they see certain things, they automatically jump to certain conclusions and go on attack mode.
Yeah.
And you can't talk them down. You can't talk them away or off of whatever they believe their firm principle is. They believe it's tried and true and you don't know anything. And for you to judge them, or, you know, it just like, you know, like they just take it too far. And that's not every progressive liberal.
No.
But there's some, and there's a lot of them. You see it all the time. Obviously, it's really big on college campuses. You know, these kids get impassioned about things, and they just literally lose their shit. And they are like pit bulls that get their jaws locked into something, and you cannot pry them off. But what you see, you can't just blame it on the younger kids, because there's plenty of people over the age of 30 and 40 that have strong progressive left values that, you know, once they see or feel something, that you can't talk them off of it. And you can't have a conversation with them, because if you present any sort of counterpoint, then they will attack you and try to beat you down and call you names Your options are to either continue to argue with them and look like a fool yourself, or just say, you know what, you know, let's just call it a day, because you are where you are and I'm just not doing this.
Or you can do it the gym way and call them names and tell them to shut the fuck up. I know where you stand on that. All right. Anyway, so that was my Saturday night. Now, your Saturday night, you watched the fight. And
I did. I was having a bit of a nerd moment and having a pretty severe allergy attack. And so I couldn't really do anything else. I was just kind of sneezing nonstop and, cursing my genetic makeup for being allergic to certain things.
Let me set the stage, because there's enough people who don't even know what I'm talking about. Canelo Alvarez fought Gennady Golovkin. These are two of the best fighters in the game today, and it got 1/100th of the attention that the sideshow from a week or two before got. Was it just last week?
No, it was a couple
of weeks ago. August 26th. August 26th. Okay. So yeah, 2 weeks ago.
It was a few weeks ago. Yeah, I mean, so... The Mayweather-McGregor fight got a lot of attention because Mayweather is who he is. And McGregor is a part of just a sport that is honestly more popular than boxing right now. It is what it is. And it was an exhibition that people were interested in seeing. Boxing is just not what it was, 15 or 20 years ago. It's just not.
True.
But that being said, Canelo and Triple G are just the best boxers. They're great to watch. They both are good, smart, strategic boxers, and they both can deliver, big,
thunder,
solid knockdown blows. And it was a quality fight that Triple G won. Canelo Alvarez came alive in the last five rounds, and that ultimately saved him, because the fight ended up in a draw, which, I'm watching it and I'm like, wait, you're listening to the scores being announced, and I'm doing the math in my head, and I'm not the brightest light on the tree, and I didn't go to math school, so I'm just like, no, wait a minute, based on that, that sounds like a draw.
Did you just say math school?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, just checking. That was M-A-T-H, not M-E-T-H?
That was M-A-F, math school.
well played.
But yeah, no, but it was a draw. And honestly, it wasn't a draw. Canelo did kind of turn it on later in the fight, but it just wasn't enough. I mean, throughout the fight, the commentators had made the statement, and I felt the same way, that, Canelo's only chance to win as you got into the later rounds was going to be a knockout. Now, he went fast and furious at the end, and definitely made it a hell of a fight and made it closer in the end than it was through the first five rounds. But this is a fight that I think, Triple G won. I think that fight being a draw, I think if you're a true boxing fan, right, a boxing purist, is bad for the sport, right? Because you lose faith and the ability to see a good fight and have that fight come out the way it's supposed to based off of what happened in the ring.
Well, and Steve, even further, one of the judges, Adelaide Bird, had a score of 118 to 110 in favor of Alvarez. So she didn't just see. She didn't just see Alvarez win. She saw Alvarez dominate.
Which and a lot of people probably don't understand how, probably don't get boxing scoring. But I mean, you know, that is a blowout win. That is essentially
10 rounds in favor of Alvarez, 2 rounds in favor of Triple G.
I was trying to make a comparison of like who versus who that would make sense there. I don't know what her deal was. And again, that's what causes, bad for boxing.
Terrible.
Now you can't trust the people doing the scoring. Now the one benefit is that those guys are going to have to fight again. They will fight again. That the fight will draw probably a bigger crowd the next time around than this crowd, because you'll have different judges. And hopefully it's just as good of a fight. And, maybe we get a clearer picture of who the actual winner is. And I think from the fight that I watched, Triple G is the better boxer. Canelo's got a hell of a heart, and he's got amazing endurance. Because, I mean, realistically, I was just surprised that he had the fire that he had, and where it came from, just because, he did take a pounding. He was very defensive early, and that takes a lot of energy out of you. But for him to be able to come back as strong as he did, that showed a lot of guts. I just don't know if it was enough. I don't agree that it was enough to say that's a tie game or a tie fight.
And I did not see it. I'll watch it on replay this coming Saturday.
I can't believe you didn't watch this fight. It's all. We talked about it a lot.
It was Saturday night. It was a pay per view. Saturday was the night I went out to watch the Indians, and so it just didn't happen.
That's fair.
But I mean, you're fair to criticize, because I am a huge boxing fan, and I should have spent way more energy trying to see this fight than watching the spectacle that was McGregor and Mayweather. In terms of boxing purists, this was way more important and way more interesting. Just part of it was I had other things going on, and part of it was I knew I'll get to see it for free next week. I didn't have any other friends saying, hey, let's get together and watch this, so I was going to have to drop the $70 on my own and sit at home and watch it, and I just didn't want to do that.
True that.
Although
you should have just came to my place to watch it.
I didn't know you were going to have an allergy attack and ask for the fight.
Yeah, I didn't either. I planned on watching. I just didn't realize that was a mess. That's a whole other story. But anyway, listen, it's late. I got a long day tomorrow, so why don't we go ahead and shut this down?
Sounds good, man. Good talking to you. Have a good trip, and we'll talk to you later in the week.
Absolutely. But everybody, you can always find us on social media, between Twitter, Instagram, and the other platforms. It's at Whiskey Congress. You can find the different articles and things that we put out at whiskeycongress.com. Find us on YouTube at www.facebook.com/whiskeycongress. Thanks for listening. Check us out. We are pretty active and reply a lot on social media. So if you have questions or concerns or comments, or you agree or disagree, let us know.
And please check us out on iTunes and give us a rating and comments. We appreciate that as well. All right, man. Good talking to you.
All right, bud.
Later.
Absolutely.
Bye.